Agenda item 9, WFW Managed Non-Lethal Pursuit Training Program. This is a briefing and public hearing. We have Rebecca Bennett and Captain Jeff Wickersham.
Good afternoon. Let me start my video. Hello, everyone. Can you see and hear me?
We can see.
Hi, Becky.
Hello. Good afternoon. I'll go ahead and start sharing my screen now. Okay. Can everyone see my screen?
Yep. Looks great.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Carpenter, members of the Commission, Director Suswind. My name is Becky Bennett. I am the Community Outreach Liaison for the Enforcement Program here at the Department. And with me presenting today is Captain Jeff Wickersham from the Southwest Washington area of Region 5. If there are any difficult questions, I suggest you ask him those. But all jokes aside, obviously I can't see you in person, so it's difficult to see if you have your hand raised or have a question. So feel free to interrupt me at any time so that I may answer those questions. So starting with this, what we're bringing forward to you today, a little background into the reasons why. Just as a information for you, our public safety response, our agency is obviously directed to provide the best public service related to dangerous wildlife incidents for the Washington state. In that regard, just touching note on the Initiative 655, which occurred in 1996, that's the prohibition of using dogs for the hunting of bear, cougar, bobcat, and lynx at that time. However, there is under RCW 7715245 the allowance or authority to use dogs to hunt a black bear, cougar, or bobcat for public safety need. That's in addition to protecting livestock, domestic animals, and private property, in addition to scientific purposes and protecting endangered species. So that's within the scope of what our agency is allowed. And within Fish and Wildlife Police, we are the primary authority or responder for dangerous wildlife incidents in Washington state. With cougar incidents in specific, WDFW police frequently call upon dog handlers to help assist with locating animals. And in those cases, at that time, the individuals that are working with us, the handlers, are acting under the purview as an agent of the state. So within that agent of the state, they are allowed to pursue the animal. However, currently, there does not exist a mechanism for these handlers to keep their dogs trained in between calls of service, so when they are not acting under the purview of agents of the state. In addition, just some more additional background. I wanted to bring these numbers to you. Obviously, we have two data information. On the left, you're going to see cougar removals. That is cougars that have been removed statewide in Washington state. Just wanted to show you that the incidents over the last 5 years have continually increased where we have removed more animals. If you're going to look over here on the right side, in that far right column under 2020, these are the existing numbers for to date as of November 20th. So at present, 92 cats have been removed from Washington state due to public safety incidents responses. It's continuing to potentially not show an increased trend. However, there is still a large amount of service calls that officers do receive. We have had, just to put it in context, right around a little over 800 calls for service specific to cougar-related public safety incidents.
Becky, okay. This yep. is Jim Anderson.
Yeah.
You said I could interrupt, sir. We could
interrupt. Absolutely. You feel free, sir. You're the commissioner, sir.
Yeah, well, one of nine. So 4, 5, and 6 all show market decreases in 2020 from 2019. I don't have a idea of what happened in earlier years, but it's fairly significant, even if there's 40 days left to make up that kind of difference. I was wondering if there's any thoughts as to what happened there, just kind of round out thinking.
At present, I'm not ready to speculate on any one thing. I definitely, when we get to the end of the year, we'll definitely be going back and actually addressing or looking at what the numbers are comparative, and then also just seeing what officers saw on the ground that may be differences from prior years. So at present, I can't speculate.
Okay.
Sorry. So just to put this again, give you, illustrate more of the reason or need that we have this relationship with hound handlers, is roughly a little over 80% of all of these removals incorporate us relying on a handler to be present during these incidences. So we are requesting these handlers quite often to come out during these incidents. And so we rely on them to be very quick and efficient in a somewhat tense situations. Just to bring up one, obviously, that most of you commissioners have been well involved in, or at least saw, was the North Bend incident that occurred where an individual lost their life tragically to a cougar attack. We actually responded with a hound handler rather quickly to the scene to find that animal. And so of these incidents, it often takes someone swift and quickly and efficiently being able to assist us during these calls for service. The next slide, this is just to further round out the reasoning for bringing this forward to you today. If we do not take proactive action, there is a high likelihood that we will not be able to utilize dogs as a relevant tool to the agency. Currently, there is limited access and training opportunities for these handlers. Often they drive long distances to neighboring states to keep their dogs trained in between calls for service and to train young dogs. Additionally, there is negative public opinion or often they are put in an unfavorable light. And so, again, this creates the jeopardization of working dogs as a relevant tool. And then finally, there really is no formal standards to ensuring that we have ethical, capable dog handlers available to us as a tool. From this, this is going back a little bit further. So this has been a rather long road for us, working alongside a collaborative group of stakeholders from several years ago. This originally started when external groups came to us, the agency, and wanted to discuss working on language that would allow for this training opportunity. That was in the creation of House Bill 1516 through the legislation that created two more or less significant minor changes, specific changes to the actual RCW, which is allowing us to be where we are today with this language. So one is changing one word into hunting, and then second is 2D, which is allowing for the creation of this program. 7712070, which is here on the next slide, is what is mandating through the legislature, which was adopted and enacted by the state on an almost unanimous decision, and the governor signed in May of 2019. This allows for the commission to adopt a rule, a process, or criteria, and that is what we have been working on for the last year. This training, specifically stated by the legislature, will include a non-lethal pursuit opportunity for these dog trainers to be able to utilize. From that, this portion of the legislature that this legislation that created this opportunity for us to create this program, really kind of, we really just rolled up our sleeves, and I would be remiss in thanking all of the men and women who sat down and rolled up our sleeves and got to work, putting in a lot of hours, days even, to create the language that you have before you today. I'd like to thank all of them for their hard work and their involvement. We had a lot of parties involved at the table sitting down, and it was very, in my opinion, worthwhile to make sure that we incorporated all of the points that all of the members included. From that hard work, we have before you today WAC 220-412-130. This is actually getting to the meat of it, which is what you have before you today, the CR 102 with the affected WAC language. There are three main points to this WAC that we're kind of go through, and I'm going to have the captain address. One is the enrollment portion of the program to be, even become a part of the program. Number two is the requirements that you have to follow before actually engaging in the event. And then finally, the reporting requirements to the agency. So to start with, and you have this full packet with you in the complete CR-102 rule language proposed, one that require an annual application of the individual. Every individual will be required to complete a criminal background check. That will happen yearly, and there will be a $25 fee to process that background check. Some of the criteria to be considered, this is not the complete scope, but these are a couple points. One is obviously currently own and train working dogs on scent detection and tracking, hold a valid driver's license, and then have up-to-date vehicle insurance and registration on any vehicles used to transport the working dogs. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and have Captain Wickersham work through what should deny entry into the application.
Thank you, Becky. Chair Carpenter, Director Suswin, members of the commission. My name is Jeff Wickersham. I'm a captain in Southwest Washington out of Region 5, and I've been involved with this process since it began with the initial conversations with some of the stakeholders coming to us and looking at this. With any program within enforcement, we want to make sure that it meets several criteria. One is that it's orderly. Another is that if we have issues with it, we have a way to address that. And one of the best ways I feel to roll a program like this out when it's going to be looked at in with such scrutiny is to make sure we have a high quality group of applicants. And so through the process, we identified some fairly stringent ways that we can address this and really make sure we weed out any bad actors before they could even get into the field and do anything. So we took a look at our master hunter rules of what that looks like, and then we pretty much put it on steroids in terms of what we wanted to do. So first off, we'll deny application to any applicant who has been convicted within the last 10 years of any offense, criminal offense, under RCW 7715, which is our Fish and Wildlife Code, 7648, which has to do with specialized forest products, again, out in the outdoors, and then any animal cruelty laws. If they've been found to have committed or have paid any infraction for violation of RCW 7715, you'll remember that during this last legislative session, we worked on adding additional civil penalties to our rules so that we didn't have to penalize individuals so heavily with criminal violations. With that, we wanted to make sure we could still take in any violations of small game rules or other fish and wildlife rules that were going to be used as an infraction. The exception with this is we would exclude violations of 7715-160, which is our recreational fishing statute, which we felt doesn't have a lot to do with hunting. So we felt like we would exclude that. If anybody has been convicted within the last 10 years of a crime of dishonesty, again, we want honest individuals out in the woods if they're going to be working under a permit or a pass authorized by us to be exercising dogs and doing this. So anything of dishonesty, been convicted of any felony, or released from custody pursuant to any felony conviction within the last 10 years. So again, being fairly stringent. Next slide. Been convicted or found to have been, or found to have committed any criminal or civil violation, found deceptive, untruthful, or if they obstructed a law enforcement officer within the last 10 years. Been convicted of unlawful possession of a firearm or is otherwise ineligible to possess a firearm. This is one that we thought was very important was, it's very hard often we find to manage for incidents that happen outside of the state. Hunters do cross state lines to go on hunting opportunities. I know there's members of the department that have been out of state in the past. I know there's lots of hunters that go there and do the same thing. So what they do out of state translates into actions that could be going on here. So we wanted to be able to capture that. So if we have or find information related to unlawful fishing activity out of state related to revocation or suspension of that license, we want to know about it. And then if an applicant is found to have, or if an applicant has any criminal charges, they must disclose that to us. And we can put off the application until such time as that charge has been adjudicated in the court system. We want to be sure of who we are accepting into this program. Through this, we want to make sure that it's reasonable. So the department has the authority to deny an application. But if the denied person wants to, they can file an informal appeal with the chief of police, Chief Bear, here with the agency. And from there, if he still finds against them, they can follow the proper administrative hearings process through appeal that's stated in RCW 34.05. So there are procedures that we're going to follow that we're required to, but there's also opportunities for an individual to appeal if they feel that the process wasn't followed correctly in terms of the denial of application. Anyone in the program found to have any of the invalidating circumstances shall be removed from the program and the training pass revoked. So if we find that there was any bad behavior we weren't aware of, or if there's something that happens that we do become aware of, we have the ability to remove them. And then if the department learns of a new pending criminal charge or incident, it should say the department may suspend the training pass applicant's participation in the program until resolution of the charge or incident. There are some documents that we haven't shown here today. There is going to be an affidavit that's going to have a long list of requirements for the actual applicant before they can participate in the program, and then also state what they will be allowed to do when they are participating in the program. So they would have to sign that, and that would be a legally enforceable document at that point that would result in the issuance of the training pass. So with that, we'd have to have the signed affidavit. Their current driver's license or an applicant's driver's license, current proof of vehicle liability insurance, like we talked about, and a copy of a valid hunting license. There are certain hound handlers that we use currently that do not live in the state of Washington, and yet they are tremendous assets to us. We did not want to limit this to just a Washington state hunting license. So we are going to give the ability to look at that for individuals that are lawfully hunting, say, in an adjoining state where they could participate in this if they were selected. Submission of false or fraudulent information is grounds for removal from the program. Again, it comes down to dishonesty. If you're lying on your paperwork, there may be other ghosts in the closet that we would want to exclude. And then as far as the training program enrollment, no more than 50 training pass holders in a calendar year. And the reason for that 50 comes down to we thought it was a manageable number. When we're looking at this in a statewide perspective, if there's changes that need to be made to that number over time, we can come back to the commission and look at doing that. And then the program is going to be administered by the enforcement program. That's not to say there's not going to be work done with the wildlife program or other stakeholders to look at how the program is working and ensure that we are working within rules and protected areas and anything like that if we're going to be issuing these passes. So step one with the training pass procedure, the captains within the regions are going to be responsible for the day-to-day operations of this program. So an individual handler that wants to get a training pass would need to obtain the pass from the department captain. The passes would be issued for up to 30 days, and there would be an optional 30-day renewal at the request of the training pass holder. What does that mean? When a captain issues this, it's going to have a geographic location that actually has physical boundaries, so we know where individuals are going to be working. There's going to be a check-in requirement between the individual captain and actually the sergeant when they're out in the field. So the training pass will detail that time frame, geographic scope. And then the next part is day-to-day, that pass holder is going to communicate with a department sergeant. So all the captains have sergeants that are deployed in the field within the detachments. They're going to be responsible for making sure that any activities are happening in compliance with the pass and the signed affidavit. The department sergeant will be apprised of the regular training activities, and the sergeant shall keep the training pass holder appraised of any operational or logistical concerns or restrictions. Say the wildlife program comes to us, says, hey, we have something going on over here. If you have any pass activity going on, let's go ahead and move that out. We're going to listen to that because we want to work with our wildlife program staff to make sure that their needs are being met in terms of management. A department captain may at any time change the geographic scope or time frame of the training pass to address management or emergent needs and retains the discretion to terminate a training pass. If we feel it needs to be stopped, we will retain the authority to do that at a moment's notice. There was a lot of conversation during the initial build of this program about who can be present. It was reasonable to think that a person with their hounds that was training dogs would actually maybe want to have a family member present. So we did decide that that was going to be okay. So we'll allow up to four immediate family members. And in terms of immediate, that's son or daughter, husband, wife, spouse, within the traditional idea of what an immediate family member is. Additionally, if an individual is on private property that they don't own, the owner of that real property who granted the permission to the training pass holder, they can be present or they can designate somebody else to be out there with them. Again, we would be notified of that, or the sergeant would be, so we know who's present. And then a department sergeant with the oversight of that area could authorize in advance an additional observer, but we have to know who they are. The whole point of this is we want to know who's going to be in the field, where they're going to be participating, and within what geographic scope, so that we can maintain a fairly tight control of this program. So we know where people are and what they're doing, and we want to know of interactions.
Thank you, Captain. To expand on the rules and requirements of the in-training, there will also be a logbook.
Becky, sorry, I took you a minute to unmute. But before you move on, if I could ask Captain, talk a little bit more about the communication requirements during the training pass period. Will that just be phoning in if you go out for the day, or is there a log, or how are you conceiving that?
Commissioner Thorburn, absolutely. We do want to, there's going to be phone communication, but there's also going to be an app that's going to be used to log this that Becky's going to discuss in a minute. Most of the hound handlers that we've thought of in this program, we work with quite closely anyway, and their interest is in bringing new hound handlers on and work in a mentor relationship. So we really want to ensure that communication, and definitely by phone is going to be happening. We want to avoid emails that are coming in the day before that are not specific. As we build out the affidavit, it's going to actually detail what that process looks like. And then as the pass is issued, the individual captain will have additional reporting requirements that they can ask of that pass holder.
Chair, if I may. Jeff?
And, Commissioner Grayville, with the screen up, I can't see many people. So go ahead, David.
Yeah, thank you. Officer Wickersham, good to see you. Just a suggestion, really. You mentioned that there would be a limit of 50 imposed per year. This is just a suggestion. That might be an appropriate number, but it appears very arbitrary, and oftentimes that is subject to attack. And so I would put some justification behind that number so that it is defensible. That's all. I just, a lot of times when we put a number out that appears to be arbitrary, then people question it, and it would just make it more reasonable if there was some kind of verbiage surrounding that about how you arrived at that number. Just a suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Graybill, and I appreciate that comment. We spent quite a bit of time going over this within the stakeholder group at the table, trying to decide what the right number was. And there were some wishes for it to be a quite high number, and there were other wishes for it to be a low number. Make sure that justification is included in any documents we send forward. But this number actually did end up being sort of a mediated compromise number at the end of the day between all the different groups.
If that's reflected in your description, that would be helpful.
I can make sure we do that.
If I could just add to that, currently it was my sense, I was able to attend the initial meeting of the advisory group, that enforcement currently works with a rather limited number of hound handlers. And you mentioned, Captain, that they're hoping to mentor and build that out a little bit. So my assumption with the 50 is it kind of built on that. You have a number that you work with. You already know what that number is, and you're building on that to give them some relief because they are called on so frequently and have to be there with such immediacy as Becky was presenting early on.
Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. That is correct. And we want to leave room to grow this out, like you just said. We're not sure what the interest is going to be at first. And if the number needs to be reevaluated down the road, we're definitely going to be looking at this in a very active management sense.
Vice Chair Baker has a question.
Unmute yourself, Barbara.
Is it not working, Nikki?
Am I on now?
There you
yes,
are.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
I've got to get used to that unmute. Thank you, Captain Wickersham. My question is, since this is such a sensitive issue and designed to respond to a very important need, which is primarily conflict, is there a requirement on these trainers to not only train their hounds, but to have us, not me, but you, train them first off, that the training's non-lethal, but how to deal with their hounds in this, as Becky said, very tense situations that often present themselves. So my question is whether we are also training the trainers.
Commissioner Baker, that is a good question. It was discussed. We haven't inserted any of that type of activity into the program. However, it was discussed many times that we want to have an opportunity for the sergeant or officers to go out in the field with the handlers while they're in the training pass program in order to form a relationship and talk about the things that we expect. So in terms of that informal mentoring that we might be able to do as a police program, as agency staff, on what our expectations are when we do utilize a hound handler in the field, there's that mechanism that would be there. In terms of how much that's going to happen across the state with all the different officers and if it was going to be used equally, I couldn't state that at all with any certainty. But I do know it was discussed, and it's my expectation that for any handlers that are here, at least in my region, I think the other captains are the same way, that we would spend some time with them to develop that relationship.
Thank you.
Are there any additional questions before moving forward? Perfect. I'll keep going. And then just as a portion here on this last bullet point in regards to the department sergeant having oversight, may authorize in advance additional observers. If any of you commissioners are interested in attending any of these trainings, if this were to pass, I would highly recommend and hope that you would be available to maybe be a part of one of these, just so that you can see firsthand what this is looking. So to get back onto the requirements of the actual program, the logbook is a necessary requirement that each individual will have to make after each trip. That would be each training. And within that logbook, it will obviously incorporate the name of accompanying individuals or observers, number of dogs trained or participating, the date, location of the said training, including any of the names traveled, as well as if there were any owners of specific lands that were traversed at that time. If a cougar is detected, the logbook must contain corresponding GPS coordinates of that, as well as there will be a requirement of if there is any discharge of any firearms and the person responsible for that discharge. These logbooks are going to be required to be reported to us within 10 days of any calendar month in which the training pass activity occurs. So this will be an additional requirement post a training that happens. Moving forward, just to discuss the rulemaking process, we did open this up on October 15th for public testimony. We, due to obviously the nature of the topic, we allowed for almost double the required public comment period time. So this will be continuing. We will be continuing to receive and collate a public comment as we get that until December 7th. This was presented to you or published this last week. I do have some updated numbers in the interest of just making sure that you have the most up-to-date information. Of those public comments received, we now have 54 that are in support, 14 that are opposed, and 3 still that have offered other solution, which is equating to 71 comments received thus far. I would make it note on the offered of other solution. Those all included just opening up hound hunting as an opportunity again, which is obviously out of the scope of A, this project, and is not allowed based off of the RCW that is in place. Of note, of those public comments received, we did receive some organizational responses as well, both in support and opposed. I'd like to point out our intergovernmental responses that we received in support, thanking all of these organizations that were either at the table or provided their public testimony in the form of letters or today in person. Wanted to incorporate some examples of what comments we did receive. I'm not going to read these to you. However, just wanted to give you a kind of theme or idea of what type of comments we did get from public. So these are the comments examples for in support. Then in addition, we received comments that were opposed. And I'll go ahead and give you a second to review that. And then moving forward, on our next steps of rulemaking process, like I said earlier, we will be receiving and compiling that testimony until the 7th. I will be creating that summary for you that will be brought to you on the December 18th webinar for the intended adoption. Within that time period, we are looking at doing obviously some additional product creation, as the captain alluded to, which is developing the logbook reporting tools. I have worked with and reached out to the fish program, who has developed the online reporting for the guides, the fishing guides, to create their logbooks. So hoping to create an online application tool that these individuals would be able to make sure that their logbook requirements are met. Additionally, we will be fleshing out and developing the affidavit and application forms, and then implementing our internal reporting procedures for this program. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions or direct them to Captain Wickersham at this time.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of questions about, I think they're in the logbook category of things. So I recall some discussion quite some time ago about whether or not this program could help on some of our scientific uncertainty on things. And so my question has to do with whether or not we can suggest any particular patterns or routes or, stratification of where folks go. I guess the idea was, if we think this particular stream basin has only one cougar in it, can we suggest that the training go through there? And if they end up training 5 or 6 instead of 1 or none, maybe we can gain some information from that. And then also was the question of when a cat is treed, whether or not there's any way of entering in the logbook or determining whether that's the same cat over and over again or it's a different cat. I think I remember hearing that at one of the commission meetings earlier, but any response to those thoughts?
Thank you, Commissioner Chair. I'm going to address potentially both of these questions, or I may ask the captain to chime in here as well. And using this as a form of either management or data collection, that's not the primary focus of this program. However, it could potentially, once we get the program up and running and we're able to provide that information to our managers over in the wildlife program, potentially. However, the process or the intent of this program is to create or focused on making sure that the handlers and their dogs are able to, one, maintain effectiveness as well as continue to be available to us.
Yeah, so let me just suggest that while that may be the main purpose of it, if we miss an opportunity to help on some of our science, boy, it'd be a missed opportunity. You know, for example, right now in the logbook, does it require anything with regard to the treed cat is a big male, a female, a kitten, or a big male with a big spot on its back, or, you know, a missing tail or a bite out of its cheek, or anything that would help on that, that wouldn't be too hard for the guys to write down, you would think.
Absolutely. And I do agree with your point in regards to being able to utilize any information that is provided to us. Working forward on this program, I think once we get the process established and actually determine the amount of time that individuals are out actually utilizing this program, I think is going to garner that kind of follow-up discussion on what information we would be providing. At present, we don't require a request that they give us specifics on an individual cat that's been treed or located, other than the location of where they actually find the animal. And oftentimes these handlers may not even come across an animal often. And I assume that in public testimony that we're going to be receiving, there will be discussion on kind of what this looks like as far as training. And oftentimes what was discussed, at least during the legislation passing prior to this WAC recreation, is that at present, these individuals cannot even allow a dog to smell or move towards a cat's scent. And so it's not necessarily about finding an animal. It's about allowing the dogs the opportunity to stay focused on scent detection.
We do have a pretty significant number of folks that want to make open public comment. If there are no other questions from the commission of staff, we can move to that now. Any other questions? Okay. Nikki, would you like to read the preamble?
Yes, sir. We'll now take public comment from attendees. As a reminder, everyone receives 3 minutes for comment. Everyone is currently muted, so if you have a question, please raise your hand. If you're on the computer, the raise hand button appears under your name. If you're on the phone, please press *9 and wait to hear you have been unmuted. That's your indication. It is your turn to speak. Let's see. So we got 9 hands up right now. Okay. Now we're at 16 hands. Let's just get going. Let's see.
Because we do have a significant lengthy executive session, we'll start off with 3 minutes. If anyone can shorten their comments and match up with someone else, that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, Marie New Miller, you're first.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to speak once again before the commission. My name is Marie Newmiller with the Inland Northwest Wildlife Council, and I promise to keep my last statement brief. The INWC would just like to state their support for the current presentation and the requests made by the department for the non-lethal pursuit training program. Well-trained dogs and their handlers are an effective tool for the mitigation of predator conflicts. The proposal ensures that the teams who are training for and being utilized by the department are vetted in order to maintain the high standards needed in these delicate conflict management situations. We want to thank everyone involved for their efforts on this plan and the opportunity to share our support. Thank you.
Thank you again, Marie, for your comments. Next, Nikki.
Next, we have Martha Hall, followed by Rachel Heyman. Go ahead, Martha.
Yes. I'd like to thank everyone who's worked on this. I think that a lot of thought and effort went into trying to attract and have professional handlers and high standards. And I really appreciate that effort. Maybe this is a step in the right direction as far as having the best people on board to do this. I'd like to add that I believe that before they're accepted, somebody from the department should go out with them and see how they're handling their hounds, the control they have of their hounds, have a field check before they're accepted into the program. I think this would help a lot, especially for houndsmen that the staff may not know. I do not believe that I heard anything about how this is going to be monitored to protect the wildlife, the cougars, the hounds, when this is occurring in the field. And I hope that there'll be a lot more thought to this after these people are admitted. We all know that there can be serious negative impacts from hounds chasing cougars. Major impacts, lethal impacts for cougar, other wildlife, and the hounds. And so I believe that this needs to be closely monitored. I believe more input and monitoring should come from wildlife experts on cougars and other wolves, other species that are likely to be impacted by this. I don't think this should be left entirely to enforcement, and I think the biologists should be in the field more with these people to monitor it. When this is added, if this is added to the requirements, that means that I would keep the numbers in the initial program to the numbers that can be closely monitored to be sure that this program has the best, which will require monitoring. I believe that the hounds should be leashed or under control while they're in pursuit. This is the only way to really prevent significant impacts to cougars, hounds, and other animals. And I haven't heard that this is going to be required either. Hounds can kill kittens. Wolves can kill hounds. This could happen. I don't believe that I heard anything about handlers having to avoid training during cougar hunting season or kitten season. I wonder why. It would be very easy to cross over, a hunter to cross over from training one day and hunting the next day. And it gives them kind of an advantage in hunting the next day. I believe that the handlers in this program should promise to not hunt within a given time, like a month of when they want to be training, to have a good separation between when they train and when they hunt, or they may sign to not hunt, which I would think would be an advantage.
You're at time, Martha.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments, Martha. Next.
Next, we've got Rachel Hammond, followed by Bob McCoy. Go ahead, Rachel.
Okay, can you hear yourself. Me now? Oh,
yes, we can hear you.
Okay, my name is Rachel Hammond. I live in Trout Lake, Washington, and I'm strongly opposed to your passing this non-lethal pursuit training program. I agree with a lot of things that the speaker just said. I especially agree that it opens the door to a lot of conflict in which animals will die. Dogs will be killed by cougars. Cougars will be injured by dogs. Dogs out across the landscape, which has not really been happening during the time that we've had wolves on the landscape, will now be targets for wolves. And the first time that a wolf kills a dog and somebody publishes something about that, then people will be out shooting the wolves. Furthermore, if a cougar attacks a dog, then it's reasonable that the cougars would be shot potentially by the houndsman, because they don't want to see their dog die. So there's just all kinds of ways that you can create conflict through this. And I think it's a disaster in the making for you and for all of us. It also, having the overlap with hunting season, opens the door to illegal activity. You know, you could have dogs following cougar tracks in the snow. They find the cougar, and then somebody calls his buddy and says, oh, you know, maybe we have a cougar here and we don't have a ticket, but maybe you do. Things like that, all kinds of things. And I just don't think you've thought through all the ways that that can go wrong, and the fact that there's no way to verify what's in those logs books. No way at all. I urge you to use your biologists to find cougars when you need to find them. They have methods and means of doing this. They do it all the time, and they are the people who you really should be engaging in, you know, in your cougar management. I really agree that they should have been at the table here. So lastly, use your money to help people protect their goats and sheep and chickens from cougars in enclosures with roosts, and then you won't have these conflicts that people want to then go hunt down cougars over. So be smarter. And I just want to say that you really represent all of us, not just the hunters, not just the people who often show up and give testimony at your meetings, but all the taxpayers who voted against hound hunting of cougars in Washington State in 1996. I beg you to respect the will of the people that you represent. And in particular, I would like it if Donald McIsaac, the person closest to my home, would represent my interest and that of all the other people I know, 40 or 50 of them in Klickitat County, who are tired of seeing our cougars, 19 of them in a year, hunted down with hounds and killed by our sheriff. Thank you.
Thanks for your comments, Rachel. Next, Nikki.
Next, we got Bob McCoy, followed by Dr. Susan Kane Ronin. Go ahead, Bob.
Thank you. Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Bob McCoy, a Washington citizen who's closely followed cougar issues for the past decade. Have done quite a few public document requests and interesting email exchange between the department's bear and cougar specialist. He wrote to the management, and he stated that a pursuit-only season was unnecessary because field staff already has trusted individuals assisting them. He warned such a season would mean dogs would die, and also talked about the probability that dogs would not only be killed by the cougars, but if they were up into wolf territory, wolves would kill them. And he stated that the pictures of the bloodied and consumed dog will be powerful, and it will fuel a political frenzy and public outcry that will set wolf and cougar conservation in Washington back significantly. Also attached was an email from the state's carnivore scientist relating a incident his team had with a highly experienced and professional houndsman when they were trying to capture a female adult cougar for a research study. And he stated that one of the dogs they were using in the chase went quiet for a while, and they thought maybe it just, you know, got hung up on something or was taking a break. But after 15 minutes of hearing nothing, they went to find it, and this is what they found. Quote, unfortunately, when I arrived on scene, I observed the dog lying dead over a small downed tree in the open forest above a small rock outcropping. The dog had been killed instantly when the cat bit her head and broke her neck. As best as we can tell, the dog was not barking while searching and managed to stumble upon or locate the cat near the rocks. There is no way of knowing for sure, but I suspect the dog was on the cat before the cat ever knew she was there and acted defensively. There was nothing anyone could have done differently. It was just terrible luck. Now, in this case, the cougar wasn't killed because the scientist's team understood it was just defending itself. But the way the rule is, doesn't really make it clear that there's to be no killing of the cougar. And in fact, when Governor Inslee signed the legislative bill, he said that he hoped it would not result in the any dead animals. Kurtzen concluded his story by saying, these guys are professionals and they understand the risks but I can easily imagine others reacting differently and demanding the cat be killed. Just one more reason this proposal is a bad idea. Again, the proposal being the cougar training season. So I'm imploring the commission to listen to its own experts, its biologists and its scientists, and ask them to testify at public hearings, and then to think real carefully about what is being authorized here and the serious damage that it could do. And going with what Rachel Heyman said just a moment ago, 655 was passed by 2/3 of the voters that voted that year, and it passed in 47 of 49 legislative districts. The people of Washington really do not want hounds out in the woods. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. McCoy. Nikki, next.
All right, next we've got Dr. Susan Kane, followed by Sophia Ressler. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi, I'm Dr. Susan Kane Ronning, and I represent the Washington State Sierra Club Wildlife Committee, and we will be submitting a letter before November or December 7th. We have many concerns about this. First off, the Wildlife Commission has increased the hunting quota by 50%. And now with this pursuit proposal, you are increasing the stressor to cougars. One of my concerns in listening to some of the questions that the commissioners had was they're treating the cougars as if they're an object, not as a important predator and species in our state, and stating that we won't know which cougar is in a tree. If we do not know that, then we cannot quantify and qualify how often they're going to be chased. And as a psychologist specializing in trauma, I know firsthand the autonomic experiences an animal has and a human has when there is a freeze, fight, or a flight. In this case, there will be a flight and a fight of the cougar. And so we are going to needlessly stress cougars when they also have to forage and care for their young. So things that we would like to see, since this is already in the legislation and going to happen, and we would like to see that the season not occur during the birthing season, which would be the prime birthing season of July, August, and September. Including family members, in our opinion, makes this a mockery of the pursuit training. It shouldn't be a spectacle, and it is not a spectator sport. It should be limited to the handler, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, a legitimate observer, if there's there for the meteor to take pictures, and the property owner. The other concern is the risk of being out of visual range. If, as one of the other people said, they are not on leash when they're pursuing, then they're going to be farther away than the handler, and we cannot observe what's happening. That issue is going to be, we can't time how long they're going to be treed. We don't know how long it's going to take for the people, the handlers, to get to the site. The other issue is how long they're going to have an animal, the cougar, treed, and how quickly they need to be called off. The other issue is the amount of time the chase can occur. Cougars are an ambush predator. They're not built for long, high-speed chases. And so the amount of time they can be chased and the distance needs to be curtailed and limited. That's going to be hard when they're out of visual range of the houndsman. Public safety in this state is ambiguous and not clearly defined, and that's what we're finding now happening in Klickitat County, where the sheriff is misusing the terminology. So the definition of public safety needs to be more clearly defined before any of this can occur.
We have time, Susan.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Doctor. Next, Nikki.
Next, we have Sophia Ressler, followed by Mick O'Brien. Go ahead, Sophia.
Thank you. It's me again. Sophia Ressler. I'm an attorney at the Center for Biological Diversity. And I just want to thank all of you so much for your time and your hard work and your energy on everything today.
I know that these are always a marathon, and I hope you all get some time to relax this weekend. The people of Washington State were clear when they passed Initiative 655, banning the use of hounds for hunting in 1996. Despite this ban, the state still struggles with the proper implementation of the exceptions and enforcement under this law. Notably, the center sued the department for a permitting program that allowed private hunters to use hound and bait to kill black bears on private timberlands. In October of this year, the court invalidated this program, which had been allowing the illegal use of hunting with hounds for over 20 years. Currently, a sheriff's posse in Clickitat County is using hounds in flagrant overreach of I-655 with the department's knowledge and concordance, despite objection from department staff. Regardless of all of this, you are moving forward with more opportunities to hound hunt and the potential for more tricky circumvention of the interests of the majority of Washingtonians. But here we are, and if this flagrant misstep is going to move forward, it must do so with significantly more safeguards in place. The rule must include restrictions so that the training program does not overlap with trophy hunting season or peak cougar birthing season. It needs assurance that houndsmen will not exploit the program by selling dogs, providing information to guide hunters to cougars, or sharing location information. It needs a decrease of the number of houndsmen allowed to participate in the program. There needs to be a restriction on the locations to protect sensitive wildlife, especially endangered species. The program needs to provide detailed descriptions for how training pursuits must be conducted, including time restriction and place restrictions, as well as other prohibitions to protect both dogs and wildlife, and reporting requirements that provide transparency to the public who voted to outlaw hound hunting in order to ensure there aren't violations of RCW 7715-245. The center will be submitting written comments that provide more details on the suggestions I have just outlined, including more prescriptive restrictions and further detail in this rule is necessary to ensure the implementation of this program does not violate any laws. The commission has already increased cougar harvest guidelines by a staggering amount this year, and we don't yet know how that increase will affect the population. It is the commission's job to protect the cougar and other wildlife of Washington State, and I implore you to do so. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your comments, Sophia. Nikki?
All right, next we've got Mick O'Brien, followed by Dan Paul. Go ahead, Mick.
Thank you, Chairman Carpenter and members of the commission. My name is Mick O'Brien. I'm working dog for Wildlife Conflict. I'd like to ensure you that the trainers vetted and selected for this training program will be some of the most trusted and ethical trainers and handlers the department has at their discretion. This process started 3 years ago, bringing all stakeholders together, including enforcement, canine trainers, conflict specialists from WDFW, the Humane Society from the United States of America, Conservation Northwest, the Mountain Lion Foundation, and many other diverse groups. Through this process, we all agreed to the vetting process to select the most ethical trainers and handlers. Most trainers are already working with WDFW enforcement, biologists, and scientists. This is a non-lethal program was set up so canine handlers could train their dogs to be an asset to WDFW. Through the vetting process, we expect only ethical trainers and handlers to make it through this process and build a working relationship with WDFW. We fully expect everyone without high ethical standards to be removed from the program. Every trainer is responsible to check in with training time and is expected to keep a logbook. We are confident this program will not be exploited and expect every trainer to work with and build a working relationship with WDFW. These canine trainers will follow the law and behave in a way that will satisfy what society expects of a handler and a hunter. They are expected to respect their canine athletes and the wildlife they may encounter and respect all others in the forest and shall respect all landowners. And finally, I'd like to leave with you as a canine trainer. The last thing I want is for a cougar to get killed or harmed. I'm out there to train my dogs, and a dead cat will leave no trail to follow and learn from. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Mick. Nikki, next, please.
Next is Dan Paul, followed by David Lynn. Go ahead, Dan.
Thanks so much, Nikki. So good afternoon, Chair Carpenter, members of the commission, Director Suswin, staff. Once again, my name is Dan Paul. I'm the Washington Senior State Director for the Humane Society of the United States. Thank you so much for the opportunity to provide public comment on this proposal. On behalf of HSUS, I did serve on the DFW Hound Handler Working Group, developed this language with the hope that doing so would bring a positive change that will help both cougars and people in our state. So it's a multi-year diverse stakeholder collaboration. And I appreciate the extensive work by Fish and Wildlife, by Becky and Captain Wickersham, especially in their commitment to facilitating an inclusive and transparent process, as well as commend and respect the thoughtfulness shown by all the other stakeholders from all sides of this issue. In addition, we also supported the legislative effort at the state capitol to bring forward this rule change. We remain deeply committed to increasing access and efficacy of our non-lethal public safety tools for wildlife conflict. So it is extremely disappointing and discouraging that we can no longer support this proposal as written. This is not because we've had a change of heart in the work done by the stakeholder group, but rather our position has changed as a result of the drastic cougar hunting quota increase that the commission passed in April, which has now completely changed the landscape for cougars from when we set out in good faith to develop this program 2 years ago. We remain steadfast in the idea of a program that will allow the agency to call upon vetted and trained hound handlers when verified public safety threats arise. However, we simply cannot support this current proposal at this time without the addition of more prescriptive parameters to minimize harm to both dogs and to wildlife after such a drastic increase in hunting pressure has been put in place. Simply put, we fear that there's now far too much stress on cougars and their kittens from increased hunting, so that being chased by dogs without some additional restrictions will actually cause an increased risk to public safety, the exact opposite of what we initially set out to do. The comment letter I submitted to the commission last week outlines the parameters we feel are necessary to include in the proposal. Of utmost concern to us is ensuring the dog training does not overlap with Washington's cougar hunting season, or at the very least to close GMUs to trophy hunting 2 weeks before and 2 weeks following a training. And then training must also not be conducted during peak birthing seasons for cougars, which is typically July through September. I respectfully ask that you please consider these additional parameters. Again, this language here is good, but it needs far more sideboards. Thank you guys so much for your service and appreciate the consideration.
Thank you for your comments, Dan. Nikki, next, please.
Next, we got David Lynn, followed by Deborah Chase. Go ahead, David.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is David Lynn from Ocean Shores, and I even occasionally get a cougar through my backyard, but I don't think I would call for enforcement because I don't think I would like the results would derive from that. The department states that the proposed commission rule emphasizes safe, ethical and responsible lawful hound handling practices, as well as detection of specific wildlife species by dogs. Goals of the non-lethal pursuit training pass program include improving dog handler / department relations, effective detection of target species when requested by the department, and ethical treatment of working dogs and wildlife. In my view, the training is neither safe nor ethical for humans, for wildlife, or for dogs. For the wildlife that is targeted, being chased and hounded inflicts great physical stress and mental trauma upon them. For the dogs, the training causes them to become vicious and aggressive, and for humans, it creates a belief that life is cheap and expendable. There's a risk that dogs will get loose from their handlers and injure or be injured by wildlife that they are pursuing. For instance, a mother cougar with kittens may attack the pursuing dogs to protect her babies. Training in wolf territory can lead to conflict as dogs pass through the wolf's rendezvous site or den sites, and there's never a good outcome from that interaction. I think that the department acts far too quickly to kill wildlife, especially cougars. I have reviewed numerous incident reports, and I would encourage you, the commissioners, to do so also, over the past several years, which have resulted in the killing of cougars after conflict with livestock. In many cases, the solution was better facilities to keep the livestock in so that the cougars could not get at them. But I believe the department should focus more on that, on educating the public on how to avoid the conflict and less on killing wildlife. As it now stands, sending out the houndsmen to kill seems to be the department's first response, and in my mind, it should be the last response. There was a question asked earlier about why the number of cougars killed decreased from 2019 to 2020. I think a better question is why there is an almost exponential increase from 2015 to 2019. I think the reduced hounding of wildlife with a focus more on education will limit the need for this proposed training, and therefore I oppose the proposal. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comment, Mr. Lind. Nikki?
All right. Let's see. Next is Deborah Chase, followed by Greg Jones. Go ahead, Deborah.
Hello, commissioners and WDFW staff. I'm Deborah Chase, the CEO of the Mountain Lion Foundation. I'm speaking today on behalf of our Washington members. We appreciate the effort reflected in this document to establish professional training for dog handlers to be used for public safety situations, and we believe that is the intent of the Washington legislature in directing this rule, this rulemaking to occur, excuse me. However, we are unable to support this proposal as written. It falls against the will of Washington's voters who passed strict limits on hounding when Initiative 655 was passed, and it acts to create a loophole in that law. And just as importantly, it places the public, the hounds, and our wildlife at further risk. Training hounds and their handlers to deploy when necessary to protect public safety is actually a narrowly defined purpose within this program. This rule broadens that purpose. For the past 2 years, hundreds of cougars have been killed across Washington for so-called public safety reasons that are mere pretexts. A cougar killing a deer or wandering by a country property may be deemed a public safety threat. Once hound hunters are given broad license to chase cougars with their dogs, it will be easy for them to claim that these hunted and terrorized cougars have become a public safety threat and that this so-called non-lethal hunt needs to result in the killing of more cougars. We have many more concerns about this rule, too many to talk about at this meeting, yet one of our greatest concerns is the latest is the language included in these rules that allow family members and others to attend these trainings with the handlers, and it causes us to wonder if the intent of this training is really to allow these folks to engage in a recreational and spectator sport. There's no obvious reason that families or any other person not directly authorized by WDFW should be present during these drills. Hounds on the scent of an animal can be very difficult to control, and this rule places risk on the observers, the hounds, and the wildlife in these pursuits. We also believe there needs to be accountability for those who receive training and oversight. This rule sanctions hound hunters to be agents and ambassadors of the state. We want to make sure they are and remain professional and receive additional annual requirements that their practices live up to being agents of the state, and that those who live and recreate here. The word ambassadors should have real meaning. In conclusion, I cannot emphasize enough that this proposal contains too few safeguards for the public, dogs, cougars, and the natural environment, and not enough emphasis on professional training of truly professional hound handlers. This program is clearly written in such a way that promotes hound hunting by individuals and should be pulled back and recrafted to include concerns of the conservation community, the safety of our wildlife, and the safety of the public. We're ready to help with this rewrite and work collaboratively with the department on providing a common sense approach, as well as using current science of our wildlife and their habitat, so this rule better addresses all concerns. We will be submitting additional comments in writing and trust you will take them, as well as others from the conservation community, into deep consideration as this process moves forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments, Deborah. Nikki?
All right. Next, we got Greg Jones, followed by Rob McCoy. Go ahead, Greg.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Good afternoon, commissioners and director. My name is Greg Jones. I'm with the Working Dog Group, and I want to thank you for this opportunity. I've provided my services as an agent of the state for over 15 years, responding to public safety concerns involving mountain lions. Over the years, I have observed dogs, 4-H goats, llamas, and everything in between being killed by mountain lions. The emotions that the owners show when I arrive range from crying to mad as hell. I'll always try to bring the human element into the situation and develop a relationship, albeit short-lived. My team of dogs are well-behaved, friendly, and efficient. It takes months and years of training to progress from a puppy to a dog used on public safety calls. I need my dogs out in the woods as much as possible, which leads us to today. Our group has been working on this training program for 3 years. We collaborated with representatives of conservation groups, tribal, cattlemen, WDFW, and others. The program Becky presented to you today is a result. Although not exactly perfect from our perspective, we all worked together and all agreed it was a quality program. Although there were critics of the program among the representatives, in the end, both sides agreed on the program of today. One point among the critics was the safety of the lions. We reviewed all known data, and there's no data exists that we could find that shows negative effects on lions. Keep in mind, this is a training program which encompasses so much more than putting a lion in a tree every time out. There are a couple other points of concern that we feel are non-issues where critics could restrict our time in the field. Breeding season, although statistics show that 70 to 80% of breeding may occur during the pulse season, it does occur year round. Several of us participate in scientific data collection through collaring, and communitively, we have not seen any issues with cat safety. Remember, we see a lot more cats in trees than just about anybody, so we are considered experts in this field. Non-targets. Part of our training protocol involves convincing our dogs to not bother non-target species, mostly ungulates and canines, so putting any burden on these species is not an issue. Finally, remember our ultimate goal is to provide WDFW enforcement personnel with a tool that they can use in public safety incidents. We want to be ready when called upon, whether it's a 4-H goat or a human incident. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg, for your comments. Next, Nikki.
Next, you've got Rob McCoy. And FYI, I have a particular person named Ron Reed who's, for some reason, not popping up in the attendees list. So I sent him a panelist link, but I'll move him back down as soon as I see him. But if you see a weird pop-up, that's what it is. But he's just not showing up anywhere, so it's super weird.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, hi. I want to thank the commissioners for the committee. I'm just want to state that I'm the forest manager for the Macaw tribe, but prior to that, I was the wildlife division manager for about 20 years, and I've been involved with a lot of research, some which involves the cougar as well. I just wanted to set that as a background as I speak. I wanted to testify support of the guidance developed, which are the culmination of a long process that included the changes in existing RCW and creation of a new one, which was a bipartisan effort of the legislature, not to mention the bipartisan effort that went into developing these guidelines, and those should both be applauded. The guideline approval is a step in the right direction. Conflicts related to mountain lions have been on the increase, and as populations in many areas have reached their maximum expected size with the absence of hound hunting as a tool for harvest and minimal harvest.
Looks like we lost him. Okay, Larry, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. We just lost him, so I don't mind going to the next person, and hopefully he'll call back in.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Okay. Buddy Woodbury, go ahead.
Okay, I should be unmuted now. So
yeah, you're good. Hear me.
All right. Hello. Boy, I didn't think I'd be nervous in front of a computer. Hello, Chairman Carpenter and members of the commission. My name is Buddy Woodbury. One misconception you might hear and I'm hearing about is that this is a pursuit season or it's really focused on a cougar hunt. And that's just simply not the intention of this program. In fact, the amount of time that a cougar is going to be disrupted or even know that there's training happening will actually be very little compared to the hours and days that we actually spend training these dogs. Most of our training happens without the cougar even aware. That a dog is even indicating or wagging its tail on the scent that it left behind hours and sometimes days early. So a huge, what does the training for us look like? The huge part of that training is simply keeping these dogs active and keeping them in shape. To a layperson who may not understand, if a dog is out of shape and is consistently panting, trying to cool off, they cannot smell with their nose. And this is essentially true and especially true in warm and humid conditions. So, a second focus that we really want to bring to light is we expect our dogs to ignore so many scents out there in the woods and they have to focus on finding one small little whiff of a scent of a cougar. That's a really difficult task for a dog to do. And the only way you train a dog is with consistency. It's not something you can just do like a 10-minute game of fetch in the backyard. You know, you can only be doing this over time of hours of covering ground, passing a lot of bad scents that we don't want them messing with, and continually searching for just a small little piece of scent for a cougar. So while so many people are focusing on the last 10 minutes of training, which may indicate a cougar in a tree, we're really focused on the days, the years of consistently passing what you have to do to be able to catch a cougar. And so that's what we really want to kind of bring to light, is this is more about training the dog. It's not so much about catching a cougar. So to be honest, in most of my experience, a lot of these scents and tracks that we'll be training on, there won't even be enough scent there to catch the cougar. Yet in Washington, we still have no abilities to let our dogs smell, learn, practice. So I'd like to give you an example. A couple years ago, I was out exercising my dogs. They smell a cougar. So naturally, they want to follow it. They're wagging their tails. They're indicating to me that they smell a cougar. Now, because of the laws the way they are, I have to tell them, leave that alone. So I have to scold them a little bit. I yell at them. I use e-collars to make sure they listen to me to leave the track. 2 hours later, I get a call about a cougar sighting in a park in Vancouver. So I load up my dogs. I leave those younger dogs at home, and I show up. And now I'm asking my dogs to do the exact opposite of what they were trying to do only 2 hours ago. With this program, it gives us a tool and it allows us trainers to provide some consistency for our dogs in the training. The call in the park, it was not a cougar. It was actually a house cat. We realized that not every call we respond to ends up with a cougar in a tree, just like not all our training ends up with a cougar in a tree. We just need dogs who are consistently well-trained to help identify the situation. So in closing, I'm asking for your support. This process has been very thorough. The stakeholders from across the state have come together. We've collaborated. We've created some strict rules. We had extremely strong bipartisan support in legislation with passing only missed one Senate vote from a unanimous vote in Olympia. I'd like to assure you that the people who participate in this program, we are not interested in shooting cougars. That has little value to us. We are also interested in making sure we continue to monitor this program and make sure that it's successful and that it's used for the intended purpose of keeping and maintaining well-trained dogs in Washington. I'd like to thank you for your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, buddy. Nikki, next, please.
Okay, we've got Roy back, Rob back on. I'm going to let him finish what he was saying. Go ahead, Rob. Go ahead and finish what you were saying before you dropped off.
Okay, I just want to make sure that I'm not broken up. Am I coming through clearly? Because I've heard that I would.
Nope, you're good.
Okay. I don't know, and I'm on my laptop next to my router. I can't explain it. Anyway, I talked about the bipartisan effort and applauding that. Say the guideline approval is a step in the right direction. Conflicts related to mountain lions have been on the increase as populations in many areas have reached their minimum expected size. The absence of hounding is a tool for harvest and minimums by boot hunts, particularly on the west side of the state. WFW needs every tool at their disposal to be able to meet the challenges of depredation events and human safety risks. The houndsmen need the ability to keep hounds in working condition to effectively respond to calls for assistance. There's a lot involved effectively using hounds for captures. It's a lot more than simply releasing dogs and then quickly putting a cougar in a tree. My years of experience with research on cougars and associated captures has taught me it takes time. The reliability of dogs to adequately cold trail, follow them through diverse vegetation over logs and across and down roads where the scent dissipates quickly. The hounds need practice and experience to do this effectively.
We lost him again.
It happened again. Well, he was starting to break up too. Okay, I guess move on.
Okay, next I'm going to do Ron Reed. He was the person I was having connectivity issues with. Go ahead, Ron.
Hello.
There you go.
Thanks for the opportunity. My name is Ronald Reed. My wife and I live on 12 acres on the west side of Tower Mountain in Spokane County in eastern Washington. We had the very disturbing experience on November 30th last when hound hunters chased a cougar through our property and treed and killed it on property adjacent to ours. literally just outside our backyard. We later found out that the department had authorized private hound hunters to take this action. There were many upsetting issues with this incident that I want to bring to your attention before you authorize even more hunters to be running through the state's woods with their hounds. First, I called both of the nearby property owners whose property was involved in this chase, and both told me they had not been contacted or notified. It turns out that the hunters and later department enforcement staff snuck onto our property without even asking for permission, even though it is clearly posted against hunting and protected by a private gate. If this is how hound hunters act when they are supposedly being supervised by the department and supposedly serving as agents of the state, how do we expect them to behave when they are given this broad license to chase cougars without agency supervision? Second, I want the commission to understand the fear, horror, and danger that this kind of experience creates for people who witness it, whether it is on their private property or if it is public property while they are trying to take a hike or enjoy a picnic. Our neighborhood has elderly people, children, and dogs, any of whom could have gotten in the middle of this chase and been harmed. Just hearing the cougar terrorized, treed, and shot was horrifying enough for my wife and others who witnessed it. Finally, I want to note that this cougar was killed because of an attack on sheep that the owner acknowledges had not been properly secured, even though the owner of the sheep did not want the cougar to be killed. This is just another in a long line of incidents that I'm hearing about in my part of the state where hound hunters are being authorized by the department to run wild over the countryside to kill cougars, often when the cougar has not even killed any livestock, but has just been sighted nearby simply being a cougar. The eastern part of the state has already become the Wild West under this commission's watch, and I shudder to think what will happen if this rule is approved. More trespassing seems inevitable, more people frightened and horrified, and more children and pets placed in danger. Sooner or later, you are going to end up with people or their pets being hurt, and that is not even mentioning the terror and stress that you are unnecessarily inflicting on cougars. Before the commission takes this sort of action, I urge it to find out more information about the hound hunting that is already taking place in parts of the state, I would guess illegally, under this department's watch. This sort of step can only make an already bad situation even worse.
We're at time, Ron.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reed. Nikki, next, please.
Next, we've got Lucas Getman, followed by Sharon Strobel. Go ahead, Lucas.
Good afternoon, Chairman Carpenter and members of the commission. My name is Lucas Getman, and I would like to offer you my opinion on the proposed cougar hound training season. I come before you as a family man, an avid outdoorsman, a hound handler, and a law enforcement officer. Recently, I have had the opportunity to learn about the possibility of this training program, which would allow selected hound handlers with the highest ethics the opportunity to maintain and further their scent trailing dog skills. This also brought to my attention one glaring question. Why has this training opportunity not been previously allowed? We expect law enforcement canine patrol team to undergo more than 200 hours of training for experienced handlers and 400 hours of training for inexperienced handlers before they can even test for their two-year certification from the Washington State Criminal Justice Training Commission. I believe this shows we expect in this state the highest level of performance from our working dog teams. I know I expect a professional to assist me with a partner they know they can trust on and off leash. In my opinion, we should have the same expectations when a hound handler is called to help resolve a dangerous or potentially dangerous cougar problem. The only way we can have partners available who can meet this expectation is training, practice, and time in the field. What does it take to turn that energetic, happy, bouncy hound puppy who wants to take every toy off the shelf you see at your local pet store into a consummate professional who leads a pack of scent trailing hounds miles into the woods with minimal input or direction from their handler? Just like with a police canine, it takes hundreds of hours in the field, training in the home, and in the city. These dogs must learn not only the common handling commands your family lab may know, but also learn and practice their specialty in order to perform at such a high standard in all situations. Trailing a cougar scent sometimes for miles takes a lot of energy, stamina, and dedication for a dog to do. They must be able to sort through hundreds of other scents and push past distractions. As the same with any professional working dog, they must train and be kept in good physical shape, both for their safety and the success of the mission. Our working dogs are no different. I think sometimes people look at a hound or tracking dog differently. They've never really met a well-trained working dog. These hounds are still our pets, our family, and often our best friends. After training or work, they walk back into our home, in my case in town. They climb into bed, and I try to keep them from tearing apart my house or pestering my wife's cats. All of this takes time, it takes patience, but most of all, it takes opportunities. With only 3 minutes, I do not have the time to also explain all the ins and outs of handling one of these professionals, but I would be happy to do so if given the opportunity in the future. I will leave you with this one final thought. When the time comes to pursue a cougar who has happened upon a school playground or city park, who would you want to show up and help? That young pup that doesn't mind and runs around licking kids and can easily be distracted? Or the trained professional who's grown out of that young dog stage and has been given the opportunity to complete this task many times before? The one who shows up quiet, calm, well-mannered, and ready to do their job. A well-trained dog makes everyone feel safe and look good. Thank you for your time and best wishes this holiday season.
Thank you, Lucas. Nikki, we have several more. I would like to ask the next group, the final group, to, if they would be kind enough to cut it down to 2 minutes, as we've got a fair amount of work ahead of us yet this evening. Thank you.
All right. Next is Sharon Strobel, followed by Rachel Bjork. Go ahead, Sharon. Make sure to unmute yourself. Okay, well, while Sharon's figuring that out, I will move to Rachel. Go ahead, Rachel.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity for to be able to give public comment. I will try to be brief. Back to word use, I am curious as to why the word removal is used when it seems what you really mean is that the cougar's killed. After reading over many of the incidents on your website in which people with hounds were allowed to go after cougars, it seems the vast majority don't seem to have anything to do with endangering people, but rather cougars being merely visible to people or occasionally killing chickens, sheep, and whatnot that are actually on their territory. I don't know why we're killing these cougars simply for inconveniencing humans. Not to mention that the citizens of this state voted to make hunting hounds with cougars illegal. As for the proposed rule itself, there are many ways for people to exercise dogs. You can take a dog for a hike or any other number of activities if the goal is to keep them in shape. You do not need them to be running after cougars. It is very stressful for an animal to be chased by a dog. I would think that having people with dogs practice hunting animals would have a very detrimental impact on the animals being chased. This is not an activity without significant impact to wildlife. I see no valid reason for allowing dogs to harass cougars unless that cougar is actually a real risk to humans that have taken precautions if they're in cougar territory. And the idea of allowing 4 family members to watch hounds chase cougars does indeed make it seem like a spectator sport. I agree with many of the previous callers that are against this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel. Next, Nikki.
All righty. Let's see. Let's try Sharon again. Sharon, go ahead and unmute yourself. Okay. We'll move on to James Van Gistel. Go ahead, James.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Chairman Carpenter, members of the commission, my name is James Van Gistel, and I'm here with the working dog group as well. I think a common misconception that I think exists within the department as well as in the public's eye, I think we've heard a lot of that here now, is that being called out on a line depredation is a training opportunity for our dogs. I think to a lot of outsiders, it's also looked at as a privilege when in reality, both these thoughts are not quite the truth. To start with, I do feel privileged to be able to work with the State Department of Problem Wildlife, and that's not something I'll ever complain about. But what is often overlooked is the commitment it takes to be able to fulfill the State Department's needs during these times. Living in a pretty rural area, more often than not, I get calls for problem wildlife, which require me to travel sometimes 2 to 3 hours one way in order to be there to help the game department. There are times this 3-hour drive may end with me getting out, spending 15 minutes learning about the situation at hand, only to put a well-trained dog on the ground and tell the department that they do not actually have a lion problem, but possibly a coyote or some other predator that has caused the depredation. There are oftentimes I take 5 to 6 hours out of my day just driving alone to help the department decipher the issue they are having, and my dogs may not actually even get to smell or trail a lion at the end of that day. Something else that I think is also overlooked is when I come to a problem wildlife call, I'm not bringing young dogs that need training. Those young dogs that need training stay at home during these events and spend the day tearing up my backyard while the other older, fine-tuned, trustworthy dogs go to work. I feel that while working with the game department, a level of professionalism is definitely required, and that means professional caliber dogs. And professional caliber dogs do not come without a lot of hours and hours spent weekly training them as they mature and progress. I guess in a nutshell, the easiest way to explain it is professional caliber dogs do not come without an exceptional amount of commitment and sacrifice from the houndsmen that own them. That level of professionalism is reached by sacrificing vacation hours away from work, thousands of miles in the truck, hundreds of miles on your boots, time spent away from family and friends, and missed opportunities to participate in certain events that many others see as normal everyday activities. Many of us with professional caliber dogs do not go on faraway vacations and even plan a lot of our daily lives around owning and training working dogs. So when they are needed in depredation or emergency type situations, we know that we can show up and trust our dogs to be successful. That is sometimes difficult to do in a state where we are given very little to no opportunity to help these dogs be routinely successful working dogs. I know there are a lot of emotions around mountain lions.
We're at time, James.
Okay.
Thank you, James, for your comment. Nikki, next, please.
Let's see, I keep seeing Sharon pop up. Let's see, Sharon, I just unmuted you. Go ahead, try again.
Okay, I think we got it this time.
Great.
Mountain lions or cougars are secretive animals that even a dedicated and seasoned outdoor person rarely glimpses. Females outnumber males in any given locality, and a single male may relate to several females in a territory. Females spend most of the year giving birth and caring for kittens, or teaching youngsters the skills of survival. This instruction and dependence may last up to a couple of years. Thus, immature mountain lions require a long tutelage period from their mother and are at risk if their mother is killed or injured. Mountain lion populations have remained fairly constant in Washington State, and it is unfortunate that the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Commission voted in April to inappropriately increase cougar hunting guidelines to an unsustainable level by nearly 50%. Also, it is unfortunate that the state legislature last year approved a plan to allow non-lethal pursuit of cougars for the purpose of training their hounds and pursuit dogs. This is particularly egregious because the general public made it clear in a former law that hunting cougars with hounds was unfair chase and should be disallowed. However, these two unfortunate directives do exist and must be carefully defined to avoid inevitable abuses that threaten the welfare of our state mountain lions. The Humane Society of the United States, as well as the Mountain Lion Foundation, have a lot to say about this issue. I think a lot's been said already. I'm not gonna go over the details. This program of pursuit training must be carefully monitored for poaching violations. Sheriff's offices must be prohibited from deputizing their own people to act as houndsmen. Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife must remain in charge and not sheriffs. A further preferred action for the commission would be to reverse their approved increase in the cougar hunting guidelines and return to the previous guidelines. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Sharon. Next, please, Nikki.
Next, we've got caller 5064, followed by Gabriel Gilbert. Caller, you are unmuted, and please state your name for the record. Okay, caller, I am pushing the ask to unmute button. Oh, there we go. Okay, are you there?
Yeah, my name is Bruce Duncan. I work with the WDFW in Spokane, Lincoln, Stevens, Ferry, and Pend Oreille County. I've helped Brian Kirsten with his study. I work with Bart George with the Kalispell tribe on their coloring study now. And the hound training program is very necessary to keep the dogs trained year round. We work in different conditions. It can be 90 degrees out in the summer, and then running them in the snow doesn't help train them for that at all. We need to keep this training season year round. You know, keep it out of the deer and elk season. You don't want to be out there when the hunters are out there. But the hounds that you use there, if you don't keep them worked, they're like any other athlete. They sit idle, and then you expect to go out and go on a depredation or a public safety matter, and then you let them sit for 2 or 3 weeks. They just don't perform. The proposal was cooperatively created with the tribes, the conservation groups, and the hound handlers and the WDFW enforcement. And I hope that you see fit to start a training season so we can keep the dogs in shape. Thanks.
Thank you for your comments. Next, Nikki.
Next, we got Gabriel Gilbert, followed by Bart George. Go ahead, Gabriel.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Thank you so much to the chairman and to the commission. I will be taking my full 3 minutes to speak, as is my right. It is not for a taxpayer or a voter to be responsible for the handling of hounds in maintaining their effectiveness, consistency, proper preparedness, and personal hound owners, and for them to be exercising. And for the last 24 years, that the voters made an overwhelming decision to outlaw hound hunting. Clearly, hound hunting owners have been able to figure out a way to exercise their dogs in the last 24 years. I expect the highest level of professionalism from my law enforcement, but then I have Sheriff Songer as my sheriff, and he has been illegally abusing the authority to use the loophole in the law to slaughter 19 cougars and counting. And Officer Wickersham has come after the event to observe and to take notes. I'm asking that the time spent for the chairman and the commission would actually be to address the loopholes in which hunting has happened and which animals have been shot, because the idea that you would have this gaping loophole of determining when someone feels that they are in danger or when you are protecting ranch owners' livestock, that it is at the detriment of what was the intention of the law in 1996, which was to protect cougars and bears from being hunted. I feel that you have spent the last 3 years addressing this, and it would be advantageous for the voters and the people to be able to see the correspondence behind the scenes of how you guys have had these discussions. And I also feel if you want to do something like this, it would have been more respectful to the voters to put it on the ballot and let us tell you again 25 years later how we don't want hound hunting. I am not trying to be disrespectful to hound owners. I have great respect for rural life styles and for those people who go and want to take their families out for hunting. But the voters were clear in 1996, and I think you need to respect this. And this, you know, this smells like some dirty dog stuff that you're doing, and I disagree wholeheartedly. And I feel that the wildlife, that you as a state agency need to be more of an agency that is protecting the wildlife as opposed to slaughtering it or to green lighting it. Thank you so much for your time, and I appreciate it. And again, when we have public comment, we want our full time to comment. Your agenda and how you set up your meetings is not for the voters to be denied their time to speak. So give us our full 3 minutes. I think that's important for any democracy and for the discussions that people are having. And I would like you to take care as an agency on what Sheriff Songer is doing in Klickitat County, because it is illegal. And when you would be more, it would be a better situation for us as voters and for the we the people, that you would actually take care of the loophole in what he is illegally doing in Klickitat County concerning the cougar kills. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it greatly. I wish you well on your holidays and to stay well and safe.
Thank you for your comments, Gabriel.
I appreciate it if you take it off the agenda on the 18th of December and not vote on this at this time. Thank you.
Next, Nikki, please.
Next is Bart George, followed by Jerry Anderson. Go ahead, Bart. Make sure to unmute yourself.
All right. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Great. Thank you, Chair Carpenter, Director Sisman, members of the commission for hearing our testimony today. Thank you, Ms. Bennett, Captain Wickersham, for describing the program, as well as the entire WDFW enforcement collective for pushing this forward. I think there sounds like there's a bit of a misconception about what we're doing here, and I want to kind of try to clear that up. This isn't a hunting season, and it's not a mountain lion pursuit season. This is really only an opportunity to train dogs on a non-lethal way. That may or may not mean actually treeing a cat. We don't expect to have that happen all the time, but certainly at some point it will. And I want to also kind of address this idea that treeing the cats leads to undue stress and different things. Certainly, there are some studies that discuss the cortisol levels in cats and different things like that, but there's really no body of research that leads us to believe that treeing a cougar leads to undue stress. In fact, most Western states that have pursuit seasons and long hunting season with dogs tend to have far fewer cougar incidents or depredations while maintaining robust populations. We only have to look at Idaho and Montana and Wyoming, different places like that, that have far less problems than we're experiencing here in Washington. I don't think a pursuit season and having cats captured periodically is going to lead to more problems than we're currently experiencing. It's certainly going to provide the WDFW a better tool to address depredations that we're seeing more and more of as this kind of rural-urban interface grows and expands throughout our region. So really, I'm hopeful that you'll consider the testimony of the people that really have been doing this and have a feel for what this looks like in reality. I think there's a lot of emotions surrounding cougars and hounds, but there's an opportunity here for the WDFW to have a better tool in their toolbox when it becomes necessary. So thank you again. Have a great night.
Bart, thank you for your comments. Nikki, you have one more?
Yeah, Jerry Anderson and Roxanne Auer, and those are the last two.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Jerry. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Okay, yeah, this is Jerry Anderson. I just happen to be a neighbor of Ron Reed, who spoke earlier about this incident. And I guess listening to all this testimony, the thing that I'm concerned about is definitions of public safety, when it's required, when it's needed, what actions are taken, definition of ethical, what does ethical mean? In this particular case that Ron Reed mentioned earlier, the people who were commissioned by WDFW actually took some of the predated sheep and used them as bait to track the cougar and kill the cougars. So I really think there needs to be better oversight, some consistency across the board throughout the state, and again, clear definitions for what we call ethical, what is public safety, and how we go about that. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Jerry. Next, Nikki.
All right, we got Roxanne Auer. Go ahead, Roxanne. Make sure to unmute yourself.
Hi. Thank you for hearing my comment today. More than a decade of available research shows that if you want to reduce cougar interactions with humans and if you want to reduce depredation, you don't hunt cougars and you don't kill them. The practice of going out and killing cougars in response to depredation just makes the problem worse. That is what wildlife experts have found for over a decade of research. So I don't understand. This conversation doesn't make sense to me based on all available scientific research. This conversation doesn't even make sense. There should be no hunting. You don't need to practice like hunting cougars with dogs to keep them fresh because, you know, by all means, don't sacrifice your time with your family to do that because it's not making the problem better. It's making it worse. And at this point in Klickitat County, they are just hunting to kill upon sight. We're not talking about a cougar that has threatened a human, that has necessarily even killed anything, livestock. We're talking about a cougar that has been seen, is being hunted and killed at this point. And someone else mentioned that 19 have been killed. It may even be more than that. This is a complete violation of the law, and it's shocking that this is what's happening. Thank you for taking my comment.
Thank you, Roxanne, for your comments. That does wrap up open public comment for this agenda item. I have a question of Councillor Panasco. Joe, good evening. It is evening now. Joe, with your worldly wisdom, how much time do you truly think the executive session that we have scheduled will take? And maybe before you want to answer that, I've been contacted by two of my colleagues that want to call it a night and plug it in tomorrow morning because our morning is somewhat shorter than normal. So would you give me your thoughts on that, Joe?
Sure. Well, so it's my understanding that there are two topics scheduled for the executive session. One is under my domain, that's the litigation briefing. But the other one is performance review, which I'm not directly involved in. So as to the litigation briefing, I believe I could wrap that up in 30 minutes or less, but you know, that's without discussion time with the commissioners on some of these hot legal issues. As to wrapping it to tomorrow, I am wide open to that. It's been a long day for all of us.
Commissioner Thorburn, are you there?
I am.
You raised the issue a bit ago about the performance evaluation and your thoughts on that. Do you think that will take more than 30 minutes?
Well, same as Joe, I certainly won't take more than 30 minutes. I don't know how much discussion there will be.
Okay. Well, two of our colleagues have requested dinner before midnight. So I see Commissioner McIsaac has his hand up. We'll take that and then make a decision shortly. Commissioner McIsaac.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just thought I'd weigh in favor of moving it to tomorrow. I think when we're published there as having a two-hour closed session, and so we're supposed to end at 11 o'clock or so tomorrow, I guess. I see when I look at that. So I've got the sunset in the background right now. I could change it to the moon and the stars, and we could go for another 2 hours, but I'm in favor, if you're asking for a poll, of the option of going to tomorrow.
Why is that an Oakland Raider insignia on the tree behind you?
I'm hoping that.
Okay, question for my colleagues. Any objection to rolling the executive session at the tail end of tomorrow's business?
No, I'm for it.
Mr. Anderson?
That's fine.
Vice Chair Baker? Vice Chair Baker, wake up. Okay. Bob Kehoe.
Well, I think we should keep going. No, I'm just kidding.
No, Molly?
I think I see Commissioner Smith is starting to transform into a bottle of Merlot. So.
Hey, your gift box just arrived. You shouldn't have.
Molly, is that a thumbs up or thumbs down?
I would go on, but you guys cater to me all the time, so I'll gladly wait for tomorrow.
I'm
a Band-Aid ripper by nature, so.
Well, I know the director would probably like to keep going tonight, but it looks to me like the majority rules, and we will meet at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. So that being said, all have a good evening. Please be safe. We're adjourned for today.
Did you get that, Bob Kehoe? 8 o'clock.
I got it. 8 a.m.
Thanks, all.
I'll be there.